Innovation Rockstars. Innovation Rockstars.
In this episode, we welcome two exciting guests. Michelle Gansley, Vice President of Global Strategic Insights at McDonald's, and Rupert Hoffman, initiator of the Foresight Academy at Audi Business Innovation.
Hi, and welcome back to Innovation Rockstars. My name is Chris Muroth, and in this episode, I am excited to welcome two guests. For one, we have Michelle Gansley, who is Vice President Global Strategic Insights at McDonald's, and we do have Rupert Hoffman, who is with Audi Business Innovation and who is the initiator of the Foresight Academy. And I think this is actually a fantastic lineup, since today we will have Insights meeting Foresight. So Michelle, Rupert, thanks so much for being part of this. I'm thrilled to have you both on the show.
Thanks.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having us.
All right, so let's kick things off with, as always, with a 60 seconds introduction sprint. This is all about you, your career, and your current role. And we'll start, Michelle, with you. So for the next 60 seconds, the stage is all yours. Let's go.
All right. Well, I'm a small town girl from Texas who has always been obsessed with culture in other countries. I studied marketing in undergrad and then went to get an international MBA in brand management, but accidentally fell into Insights. And I'm so glad I did, because I love the world of Insights. I've worked for Mars doing pimping chocolate and gum for 15 years. And then most recently have moved to McDonald's. So I've traded in gum and chocolate for fries and burgers. I live in Chicago with my partner and our three cats. So, but don't call me a crazy cat lady.
I won't. Thanks, great intro, and very much on point, even shorter than 60 seconds. Perfect. Now, next up is Rupert. Rupert, the next 60 seconds are all yours. Let's go.
So, well, my three cats are skiing, I'd say. I have been skiing since I'm three, so this passion is continuing. Later, after high school, I went to Brazil for a year and a half, and there I found out that business is important, and I studied international business and cultural studies, and in parallel I studied at Munich Academy of Fine Arts because I love to draw. And yeah, it's for me it's pretty much about what drives people and what changes. So when I do drawings by observation, that is observing people and what is here, and the foresight topic is what may come. And so later I joined Audi, did my PhD there, and then came to Audi Business Innovation here in Munich. And since then, I have been doing research on future life roles. And here we are.
And here we are. Beautiful. All right. So for the next thing, I'll give you, each of you actually, two sentence starters. And I would like you, you know, to complete those sentence starters. So number one is for Michelle. McDonald's is a great place to work because
McDonald's cares is a relationship based organization, and they really care about the crew, the community, their customers, and their employees. And it's a really emotional brand. I don't know a single person who hasn't been to McDonald's at least once in their life, and almost everybody has a story from their past or present about McDonald's.
That's actually true. Same here, by the way, of course. All right. So next one, Rupert. My three secrets to success are?
Well, that is to involve other people, especially where I do not have my strengths. And there are many places to involve other people. So, yeah. The second topic, which I would say, is to network and to be a network giver, to bring people together. And the third one, to apply visionary thinking, especially where it is unclear and vague, to say, okay, I believe that there is a potential, and then let's go for it, and the way there will be found on the way, and much surprise will come up, but we believe in tying up our shoes to start going.
All right, got it. Very cool. So number three, Michelle, this is again for you.
Foresight is identifying signals of change and minimally preparing ourselves for future world possibilities, but best case, actually influencing those future world possibilities.
Got it. And let's turn this upside down, Rupert. For you, the one is foresight is not...
Foresight is not prediction. And it's not clearly calculable.
And also not only looking into the crystal ball, right? Great answer. Thanks so much. So, you know, let's start with some strategy talk for this episode. So, you know, Michelle, although the COVID-19 pandemic hit McDonald's hard and prevented customers from, you know, as we all know, dining in most of the restaurants and so on, I learned that McDonald's actually emerged as a winner in fast casual. And I read the earnings call for quarter four 2020, and in that paper, the CEO, Chris Kempinski, actually partly attributed the success to McDonald's new growth strategy, which is called Accelerating the Arches. Michelle, maybe just briefly, can you walk us through that growth strategy just to understand the basics and where this all is coming from?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, first of all, Chris is a great leader, and he is traditionally trained in CPG, and he understands the importance of clear strategies, both to the street and to the employees. And so ATA strategy is built off of the letters MCD. So M is for maximize marketing, C is for commit to the core, and D is for digital drive-through and delivery. And so that makes up the core of where our priorities are. So with maximize marketing, of course, it's how do we make sure we maximize the distinctive assets and the power of the McDonald's brand everywhere in the world. With commit to the core, there is a human truth, especially in times of change and uncertainty, that people want core items that they know and love. So make sure that we are delivering the best possible quality on the core items that we sell, whether that's chicken McNuggets or a Big Mac, for example. And then digital drive-through and delivery really is a huge reason why we've been so successful. Even before pandemic, we started forming partnerships with companies like Uber Eats to offer delivery. We have more drive-through presence than any other QSR in the world. And then, of course, we're really amping up our digital presence through a McDonald's app and loyalty program.
All right. So for one, it's basically grow the core. And I mean, of course, sure, there you have massive scale, right, globally, but also go digital as well. And I think there are actually not too many countries where no McDonald's is existing yet. I think there are just a few countries in the world, but it's, you know, from speaking from a global scale perspective, it's actually, you know, quite massive. So now with you being the VP of Global Strategic Insights, and when we talk foresight, what role does insights and also foresight play in that strategy?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, and part of the reason why I'm here with Rupert today is that I think what McDonald's is the leader in the world. And as you pointed out, we touch so many countries that we have a responsibility to not just react to the future, but to influence it. And I think the majority of our energies and efforts have been in 0 to 3 years. So there's a recognition that at least a small part of the business needs to be looking out further than those 3 years to make sure that we are prepared and influencing. And so my team, along with some cross-functionals, are leading that work to help prepare us for what are the potential headwinds and tailwinds that we see that's going to impact the industry or impact us as a business that we need to be working towards. And so as a part of that, one of the first things we did was join the Foresight Academy, which Rupert leads.
Exactly. Coming to the Foresight Academy, actually, Rupert, how is this, you know, on your end? How did Audi, you know, get started with Foresight? What's the story of the Audi business innovation, and how do you, you know, approach that topic today?
Well, I would say that if you take customer centricity serious, then you have to think, to reflect, to do research around the customer of tomorrow, especially if you lead with so long lead times, but also if you lead with shorter lead times, like Michelle mentioned it right now. But in the car industry, it's around 7-10 years that we need to develop a new product. So yeah, that's why Foresight has an important role within our industry, and we always have been looking for a broad view and for other perspectives, and that's why we came up with cross-industry research and with looking for other partners from other industries with whom we could be working together.
Got it. Now, talking Foresight Academy, can you just give us a brief overview, of that? I learned you initiated it, you are leading the Foresight Academy, and you include, as you mentioned, corporate leaders from many well-known brands, including McDonald's. So, can you talk a bit about what is the Foresight Academy exactly, and what is its purpose?
Yeah, of course. It's a platform, so as we are many members, 16 in the current round. So it's a foresight-oriented platform where companies from different industries do research together around the question, how do we want to live in 10 years? And based on these outcomes, we create shared visions of desirable future everyday life. So it is about exchanging among us and learning from the other perspectives and experiences. Then doing research together, we brought all the key questions of the different partner companies together and did basic research based on that, are building hypotheses, are doing lots of trend receiver talks and rookie trend receiver talks in the next months, then go into the synthesis process, and then we will do the visualization process to have clips and images and stories and central presentations we can bring across our companies. So transfer is the third column in this program. So it's a journey that we're doing together, so to say.
I was just about to ask that. So how do you do that? I mean, do you just, get everybody in the room, say, hey, Michelle, come by and, let's talk, give me some of your insights or give me some of your, secrets to success, your secret sauce or whatever. And then you, put it all together, create some, and I'm exaggerating right now, so some nice images and videos and pictures and say, well, okay, that might be the future. Certainly, this is not the process. So how do you do that? How do you collaborate with the different organizations and leaders that are part of the Foresight Academy?
Well, I would even say that in part it is because, of course, we exchange and we want to know what are the problems you're dealing with, how do you address them, how did you manage to have access with these Foresight outcomes to the top management, and how did you influence the strategy or product. So that really is exchange is one part, and meeting people is a part too. Of course, we are doing most meetings virtually, but the personal meetings are important in that case. So we met in September. In November, we wanted to meet, but due to the lockdowns and pandemic, it hasn't been possible. But in 3 weeks' time, we're going to meet again. So twice a year, we try to meet, and then we have all the other the intermediary touch points virtually, and so yeah, it's a joint process. We align on the important decisions, and we bring the different perspectives to the table, and it lives from this diversity, of course. So yeah, what you were asking is that we're well organized on the one hand, but we try to permit enough exchange and time for the surprising stories, of course. And it lives from the activity from the different partners.
Yeah. I mean, I think from my point of view, the geniusness of it is that when it comes to foresight and insights are universal, but what we choose to do with that information is going to look different whether I'm SAP or McDonald's. Right. So we're sharing in the costs of going deep on the understanding of what are the human behavioral shifts or the macroeconomic shifts, and then collectively understanding from each other what we might as businesses do with that. But, how I react to it's going to look different. So there's no conflict of interest in that, but we're all sharing and getting to better, bigger insights. So I personally really enjoying the process, and it's been great connecting with other companies as well and being able to share opportunities and problems together.
So the expectation from the participating companies would be, as you said, sharing the cost of generating insights, really going deep on those matters, maybe more specifically even on behavioral changes, as you said before, right? So what is a certain... what are, people expected to change in their maybe consumption behavior, in their living behavior, whatever, in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever, out. But when it comes to, you know, formulating strategies or tactics, how to approach that, most obviously you're not sharing this, Michelle, right? So this is something that's, again, then being, you know, privately at McDonald's or in your strategy teams whatsoever. Okay, I understand. So before we go deeper into some of the collaboration formats, I would now actually play a quick game, and it's called Either Or. And the rules of that game are really, really simple. I'll give you two options. From those two options, you choose one, and then you spend one sentence briefly explaining your choice. And let's give it a shot. So, Michelle, you go first. The first one is, would you either prefer McDonald's restaurants run solely by robots or customers getting their burgers from their 3D printers at home in the future?
That is so difficult. If I had to choose one, I think there's always a need for human connection. And so I can't imagine a world where it's only run by robots. So I guess I'll go with 3D printers, especially if it allowed for more personalization and customization.
Okay, that's actually a great reply. Now, the next one's for you, Rupert. So this one here is only for you. Either Big Mac or McRib?
It's vegan burger, I'd say.
It's vegan burger. Okay, beautiful. All right, Michelle, next one for you. Would you either work 100% at the office or 100% remotely in the future?
I feel like Rupert has to still answer the question. He can't skirt around it. I'm going to say if we could have offsites like once a month or a quarter, I'd say 100% working from home. But again, I think it's still important to meet as teams. There's certain things that can't be done virtually.
Yes, totally agree. I mean, imagine, you know, all the strategizing and creativity and inspirational work only 100% remotely. That's maybe, you know, a good occasion for meeting on site or doing some offsites or whatever. Okay, agreed. And Rupert, finally, in 10 years from now, would you either prefer living in a world where most of the interactions will be with an artificial intelligence rather than with humans? Or would you rather live in a world in which a devastating solar storm damaged most of our technology and infrastructure? What's your choice?
Well, I think I would go for the solar storm. I don't know. I think that could be fixed later, and not interacting with humans would be very tough for me. Look, I had 2 days ago, I had this situation. I went home from office and had been looking to the screen all day, and then it was raining and cold, and I was on my bicycle here in Munich, and wow, it was ugly. But after 200 meters, I started enjoying it, and I felt so kind of alive, and I liked even the rain and the cold wind. So I need the physical world and the interaction. Also, of course, the opportunities are increasing, and we will use them enormously.
Yeah, and the human interaction. I mean, you know, I gave you two dystopian choices, so not very fair, but great answer anyhow. Yeah. So okay, it's the human interaction. Okay, so let's come back to insights and foresight, and let's discuss this a bit. So Michelle, you know, with you being the VP on Global Strategic Insights, you already mentioned how you differentiate, right, between, you know, strategic insights on the one hand, and also on the time scale that's involved here, and then on foresight on the other hand, which is, you know, far further out. On the insights part, who is your actually internal customer for those global strategic insights?
Yeah, I have a allergic reaction when people talk about customers or us, clients as insights, because we're business partners, and right, we partner with different teams to help uncover human truths to drive business strategy versus being a service provider. So I only say that to reinforce, I think that language needs to go away when we talk about corporate insights. But within the world of insights, I mean, right now the remit of my team is everyone across the customer experience team. So that's global marketing, global operations, global innovation, and also our like digital products and experience teams.
Got it. Okay. And how do you acquire those insights? I mean, is there specific data sources you use? Where'd you get the data from?
Man, all kinds of places. We, through our app and other places, we have, of course, access to first-party data, but we work with a myriad of different partners to capture third-party data as well. And then we run all kinds of researches from direct, indirect, qual, quant, anything you can imagine. I'd say increasingly it used to be, you know, in the research world, we had a small portion of large research suppliers, and now it's becoming more and more fragmented where we use consultants, research tech suppliers, MarTech suppliers, internally built tools. So the world has gotten certainly more fragmented and complicated in terms of how we get insights from.
Yeah, interesting. And just a follow-up question on that. So ultimately, how do you make sense of that? I mean, okay, we have the insights data that's the rather short-term scale, and then also connected the Foresight Academy. You have, rather more outreaching and far out data and information, assumptions, scenarios, hypotheses, whatever. So, and I would assume that it's not simply a continuum to say, well, okay, on the short time scale, this and that happens, and our assumption about the future is maybe, somewhat more vague, obviously, but, this is kind of the advice or the data I'll give to you give to the business partners. So where is the connect, and why do you even differentiate between insights and foresight? Isn't it just something that's happening in the future on a certain time scale, and you want to make sure you're advising and supporting your business partners best? So what's the connection?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think this, the fundamental difference besides time horizon, is an insight is generally started from an identified business problem to be solved. And then we have potentially hypotheses, and we're trying to then go and either validate or explore or understand that problem more. So there's a defined problem, and therefore we go and do work around that problem to come to an answer, a recommendation, and a strategy or an action. With foresight, there's no question being asked. It's more seeking to understand how the world will change so that we can be prepared to change with it or influence that change. So it's fundamentally different things that we're going after and different approaches that we would take to accomplish that.
Got it. That's actually a great answer. Thanks much for clarification. Beautiful. So, let's dive into the Foresight Academy. And Rupert, by the way, how did you and McDonald's actually find each other? Did you just, reach out to Michelle, say, hey, got something great for you? Or how did this actually happen?
Well, I didn't know her back then. That was via Katja Sotmeier, who has been with Foresight Academy for long and has participating, shaping it. She works for Hornbach, top executive in Hornbach. And she knows Susan Schramm, who's the CMO of McDonald's in Germany. And Susan connected me to Michelle. And we first met in September, but we had two or three online meetings before. And that's how that happened. But she brought me in touch with interesting people again, like Jake Soripiatis, if I pronounce him right, who has been here as one of the innovation rock stars. By the way, there are many people from Foresight Academy who have been here already. Thomas Berman's from E.ON, Janine Mattis from, Jasmin Mattis from Hornbach. Ben Blumus already had been participating in a previous round with Siemens, so yeah.
Christian only hangs out with quality people, Rupert.
Ah, okay, that's why. Yeah.
I was just about to say that. Michelle, okay. when going into the Foresight Academy, what was your expectations on that? I mean, clearly the expectations were laid out quite properly by Rupert. On the way how you would collaborate with the different companies in there. Did you either expect it would be a more, a rather secretive thing, or were you actually expecting everybody to be open and sharing, their assumption about the future? So how did this turn out?
Yeah, I don't know if I knew what to expect, but I've had really great success joining other collaborations with other big brands in the past. And so I knew that that's a successful model, at least for me. I mean, what I can say is that, I don't know, Ripper, you're like in the fourth year. the professionalism and the quality of the interactions and the output is the best that I've ever seen. And, you know, that's a lot driven by Rupert, but also, you know, they work with a design agency, academia, and other organizations beyond the brands in order to pull it off. So from my perspective, it's definitely exceeded my expectations.
Well, you see, Michelle and I, we do have a praise cartel, how to say, or a credit cartel that we're crediting each other and how that is working. Yeah.
And now when you develop stories in your scenarios for different versions of the future, probable and likely, not likely, how much insights and details do you actually share between those participating companies? You've said something about, you know, how or which level this basically happens, or rather high level, low level, or whatever. But, you know, is there some tendency of really being open and honest to each other, or do they rather opt for confidentiality, which may actually lead into, you know, somewhat more general assumptions about the future? What is your take on that, Rupert?
Well, I'd say there is no problem in sharing experiences and some insights into the markets. We wouldn't share very secret strategic topics, but that is not so much part of what we're doing, because we bring together customer needs we're talking about. So in the case of Audi, we wouldn't share with the other partners our cycle plan, which car models are we bringing to the market in which month and year. So that is something, but it wouldn't be necessary for doing research on changing customer expectations and on desirable future everyday life. So and pretty much is about how we want to live. So it's really about working together and fueling this with the different research sources we bring together and creating a very broad view. So this problem of confidentiality has not been a big problem so far. It is mentioned in the contracts, and we address it, even antitrust topics and so on. But that's very theoretical. That's has not much to do.
Yeah, got it. Okay, so let's talk about the future, right? So, Robert, what are some of the major shifts and drivers we will most likely experience in, say, 10 years from now?
Oh, I mean, that is what we can be talking about for hours. So, no, but well, it's an interesting question, of course, and it always depends a lot on the perspective which shifts are more important for you. So I always argue that you have to define the research questions, and then you look at the important trends and shifts. But if you ask me about the next 10 years, what I'd say are shifts that definitely are prominent. There's the recalibration of human aspects and digitization, of course. So we're entering a new continent of digital opportunities, metaverse, and these are buzzwords. But it's really fascinating what can be done and how we can combine real world and fiction and build digital twins, but put that together with fantasy. So that's a new continent. We have been in this continent, settling in this continent for decades, but there is much to come. At the time, we have to see what is really the human aspect, what is about intuition, vision, empathy, originality, and how that will be recalibrated. And on the one hand, we have the tremendous opportunities by quantum computing and artificial intelligence and biotechnology. And on the other hand, our human perception limitations, and that will be very influencing, of course. Then I'd say we have an increasing consciousness for our resources. How we deal with that, our resources as humans, let's say time, health, sense, relations, and to perceive them as the hard currencies, and not to accept to spend too much health just for a career, for the sake of a career, of a money, or to stress ourselves too much and so on. So that will the consciousness for health is tremendously improving, at least among the among those with higher living standards. Then I'd say that is maybe not surprising and very important, of course, the ecological pressures that are coming. So the recent IPCC report said that 3.5 billion people are living in regions which are highly affected by climate change. So that is, the pressure will increase, and we will have more floods and more hurricanes and more droughts and water shortage and heat waves and so on. That will definitely affect us. There are huge power shifts, shift to Asia, to Africa, to women in power. What major to cities, of course. So even COVID will not reverse urbanization in the world. So we continue to become more urban. We're gonna to see a lot of automation. Yeah, and last but not least, I'd mention the parallel worlds, the parallel narratives that we're having, and therefore the frictions. I mean, we see that cruelly in the moment in Ukraine and in Russia, how that the stories are told. At the same time, we see unification around values, and but there's these topics of frictions, of split societies, of common grounds that will be very important. I mean, just imagine if Trump would still be the president. So we don't know what the American midterm elections will bring. We don't know what 2024 will happen. But yeah, here in Europe, there are so many big topics. So prediction doesn't make sense. And I think, politics, at the end, it comes to politics. So I remember some time when politics has been regarded as something less relevant, and that definitely came back and will be very prominent in the coming decade. So, but what would you say, Michelle? So, I mean, that was just a first list.
I say ditto to what you said. No, that was a good list and a very all very true. I think the only other one, and those are all very true, that we talk a lot about is coming, that's new from COVID, is there's this weird polarization that's happening where people are more risk averse, but also wanting to like splurge and cheat and be a little naughty. So in some areas, I'm being very careful about decisions I make on like things like vacation or who I hang out with. And then on the other side, I'm like buying that purse that I've been wanting, or taking that trip, or going out and spending more than I would normally in a restaurant. So I think that's like fascinating what you talked about, parallel worlds, like even parallel behaviors that are happening with consumers.
And Michelle, maybe in addition, that's really interesting. Maybe in addition, what would be your assumption on how people will spend their time in the future, maybe 5 or 10 years out? We heard different things, what is it with the metaverse? What is it with maybe even digital twins? So how are people expected to spend their time, given that there is even, an increase in life expectancy in the next decades or so? What do you think?
Yeah. I don't know that I'm super able to answer it, but again, in that parallel world, in one way we might be double downing in retreating inwards and spending more and more time at home and creating sanctuaries at home, but then living the external world in things like the metaverse. Or it may swing the entire other way and all of that may come crashing down, and then there might be a renaissance towards human connection again. And or there might be some hybrid in between where people are choiceful about where they have human connections, and then for the majority of things in their life where it can be done virtually or more conveniently, that they live that part of their life virtually.
And how would that play out for McDonald's? I mean, with the with Meta, for example, Mark Zuckerberg, of course, aggressively pushes that vision. So, of course, McDonald's will want to be part of that, right? So how would that look like? Can you get some fries, a burger, NFTs, or that there might be, some way to do business and connect with consumers, obviously in that world too?
I mean, we're definitely tipping our toes into it and looking how we can do things like, for example, create a McDonald's presence in the metaverse. I think it's important for us that we do it authentically, on brand, and create meaningful experiences. So we want to make sure that we don't inadvertently harm the brand or harm consumers. But for sure, we're looking into how we play in that world.
Got it. All right. So now that we talked a lot about possible futures for the world and for the companies, let's move on to finally talk, you know, a bit of about your personal future, right? So, Michelle, you know, starting with you, what does the future hold for you at McDonald's? So, you know, what are the high priority topics you focus on?
Yeah. I mean, we talked earlier about our strategy, the Accelerating the Arches strategy. So we, of course, will continue to evolve that strategy. But right now, a lot of the things that we're thinking and talking about besides Foresight is how do we modernize the marketing and insights function? How do we make sure that we're, you know, bringing best in class approaches? How do we continue to bring what's the next new core product that consumers will love, like potentially the vegan burger, which we call McPlant? And then how do we continue to evolve our digital drive-through and delivery experiences?
Yeah, got it. And same question to you, Rupert. So looking to, you know, the future and also your personal future and the future of the Foresight Academy, what's next?
Right now, what's next is the Trendyceiver talks we're going to have in May and June. So we're condensing the hypothesis and thinking about the topics we'll address in the dialogues with the people. So that's what's concretely next. And then we go into the synthesis process and into the visualization process.
Further out in the future, you know, what's next? I mean, of course, you have the next batch. But where is Foresight Academy going? Any plans to, you know, expand or?
Oh, beyond. Well, we're concluding this round, which goes to December of 23. And we do not too much foresight beyond that. So we're concentrating on the present in that window. We'll see afterwards what we're going to do. But we'll see together with the partners, and then we will define where to go. Yeah. And it will be surprising as the future always is. It will be surprising, I guess.
As it always is, you cannot foresee that. That's true. All right. And then finally, I need to know your rockstar moments, and I'm really curious to hear about that. Michelle, let's go, you know, first. When you reflect, look back on your professional career, what would you say was your greatest innovation rockstar moment so far?
In my entire career? Goodness, that is a big one. Well, I guess I'm pretty proud of the fact that, especially as an American, I have worked in multiple countries, and from that experience, I've learned that, you know, human insights really are universal. And so that makes me more able to be more bold in making recommendations, decisions. But that's the opportunity to have lived in Germany and the Netherlands has been probably a highlight of my career.
Beautiful. Rupert, tell me your innovation rockstars moment.
I'd like to take the one in 2009 when I first applied the Trendyceiver method in an Audi project. So I had the opportunity to experiment the first outcomes, the research outcomes in concrete Audi projects, and then I had done the research on Trendyceivers and who that would be, and we defined the profile, people who were both customers and visionary, and we looked for some people, and we found some where we thought they would be the right persons. And then we had this first workshop and discussion with four Trendyceivers, and I've been quite nervous to see how that works and when they started introducing themselves and interacting and bringing up their observations and really worked, and theory became practice in a way and accessible. That was a great moment for me.
All right, brilliant. So we got two rockstar moments in one episode. That's great. They both sound like, you know, really great experiences. And with this, we are already up to wrapping up this episode. So Michelle and Rupert, it was a pleasure to listen to you. Thanks again for the inspiring insights and also the advice of Foresight and being a part of this.
Thanks for the chat. It was fun.
Thanks a lot, Chris. Thanks a lot, Michelle. Good to see you again.
See you soon, Rupert.
And to everybody listening or watching, if you like the show, leave us a rating or a review and share the podcast with friends and colleagues. And if you want to get in touch, simply shoot us a message at info@innovationrockstars.show. Now that's it. Thanks for your time. See you in the next episode. Take care and bye-bye.
That was our pair of innovation rock stars, Michelle Gansley and Rupert Hoffman, on collaborative and cross-industry future shaping. If you want to learn more about the Foresight Academy, or if you'd simply like to give us feedback on this episode, feel free to email us at info@innovationrockstars.show. For more inspiring innovation stories, visit our website at www.innovationrockstars.show. or browse through our Innovation Rockstars channel on all major podcast platforms. And while you are here, please leave us a rating for our show.